Welcome to the podcast series for HAP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Hoffman et al. Titled, Calcium Entry via TRPM2 is Essential for Cardiac Myocyte Bioenergetics Maintenance. This article published in the March 15, 2015 issue. My guests today are Associate Editor Rongli Liao, Lead Author Joseph Chung, and content expert Nazareno Palocci. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. This paper by Hoffman and colleagues in Joe Chung's laboratory very nicely demonstrates the role of TRPM2 channel in the heart. Specifically, the authors show that the calcium entered via this TRPM2 is critical for maintaining cardiac myocyte bioenergetics and function. Joe, could you please provide us the motivation behind your study and some of the highlights of your findings?
Thank you, Rongli. We started this project about 4 to 5 years ago. And at that time, the conventional wisdom was that calcium entry through TRPM2 would do a lot of damage to the cell, increase cytokine production by the inflammatory cells, and should worsen ischemia reperfusion injury. We undertook that project to see if TRPM2 is detrimental to ischemic reperfusion injury. My collaborator, Dr. Barbara Miller, made the global TRPM2 knockout mice. And so we did a very simple experiment with ischemia for 30 minutes, followed by reperfusion for 48 hours. The knocking out the TRPM2 channel was much more detrimental to the aggravated ischemic reperfusion injury and exactly opposite to what we expected. We had no idea at that time why that is. So we undertook a proteomic study, and the proteomic study pinpointed that the mitochondria was the target area in which TRPM2 protects the heart from ischemic reperfusion injury. We undertook a lot of mitochondrial studies, and all of them show that the absence of TRPM2 caused mitochondrial dysfunction even at baseline, but more importantly, aggravate ischemic reperfusion injury. The purpose of this paper is to find out if the calcium entry through the TRPM2 is necessary to protect the heart from ischemic injury. We already demonstrated that TRPM2 is localized on the sarcolemma and the T-tubules. We then generate mutants in which they either dysfunctional, meaning no calcium will enter despite activation by ADPR, the channel that will inactivate, meaning that the calcium entry will slowly decrease with time, or a mutant that will double the selectivity of calcium over sodium by twofold. Using these mutants, we first use adenovirus to express these mutants as well as a wild type in the global knockout cardiomyocytes. So the first highlight is that we clearly demonstrate that calcium entry through the TRPM2 channel is absolutely necessary to maintain mitochondrial function as well as protect from ischemic reperfusion dysfunction. Because TRPM2 channel is ubiquitously expressed on a lot of tissues, there are always questions whether the TRPM2 is functioning on the heart cell for protection, or is it due to decrease in inflammatory response on the white cells on the phagocyte. So to do that, we can generate a cardiac-specific knockout mice in which by various estimates, about 79% of the TRPM2 channels are knocked out in the cardiac myocytes. And similar to the global knockout mice, the cardiac-specific knockout mice suffer more severe ischemic reperfusion dysfunction. So proving that this is the TRPM2 that exists on the heart cell that is doing the protection. So that's the second major finding. Ischemic reperfusion injury is widely considered as an oxidative stress, oxidative injury. So we'd also turn around to doxorubicin induced cardiomyopathy, which is also a model for oxidative stress injury. Similar to the ischemic reperfusion, TRPM2 protects the heart from doxorubicin-induced cardiomyopathy, and knocking out the channel aggravates the injury. So that's a third major finding.
Thanks, Joe, for a very nice overview. Naz, I would like to ask if you have any question for Joe.
Joe, first of all, I would like to congratulate you and your group because this is a very, very thorough experimental approach. Going back to your illustration of the study, you said that one of the main endpoints was the detection of ROS. And you clearly show that calcium entry via this channel is necessary to maintain a lower emission of mitochondrial superoxide. So I would like to ask you what kind of sources of ROS you have in mind, particularly from mitochondrial origin.
Thank you, Nas, for your very encouraging comments. Our initial study using the DCF showed that the ROS was increased not at the baseline, but at the after ischemia reperfusion, the global knockout mouse has a much higher ROS level as indicated by the DCF fluorescence. So we use MitoSox, which as you know is specific for the mitochondrial superoxide, and the MitoSox signals are higher in the baseline and also much higher in the global knockout and also much, much higher after hypoxic reoxygenation. So our hypothesis is that the calcium entry through the CHIP channel somehow, maybe via the ER, go to the mitochondria. This constant influx of calcium will then stimulate the mitochondrial calcium-sensitive enzymes, you know, the pyruvate dehydrogenase, the alpha-ketoglutarate dehydrogenase, etc., to then provide the NADH for the electron transport chain. Without that, then there will be a lot of inefficient electron transport resulting in generation of superoxide, which we shown by the MitoSox signal. The other thing is that knocking out the TRPM2 also reduce some of the oxygen superoxide scavenging enzymes, such as the superoxide dismutase and thioreduction. So we think that is a combination of overproduction as well as reduced scavenging that causes an increase in the reactive oxygen species, primarily the mitochondrial superoxide production.
Joe, going back to the superoxide saga, I mean, your data clearly show that despite similar influx size and area at risk, the global TRPM2 knockout mice, they have actually lower DPDT max as early as 3 days after MI as compared to wild type. So I'm interpreting your data correctly in saying that this interplay between the extracellular calcium and the activation of these channels is likely more vital for ruling processes like EC coupling rather than having pro-survival or anti-inflammatory effect?
Now, thank you. That's a very excellent question. It's absolutely true in both the cardiac specific and the global knockout experimental model. We don't see a difference in influx size or area of risk. That's why I'm very, very careful to call it protection for ischemic reperfusion dysfunction. We think that even in the baseline, the ATP levels are already lower in the global knockout hearts. And we think that you are absolutely right that it may be that it's a lack of energetic balance that is causing this dysfunction, this contractile dysfunction, rather than a pro-survival. So I think you are absolutely correct, you know, about that.
And so, Joe, you think that basically by limiting overall mitochondrial ROS emission, the activation of TRPM2 channels may limit in turn also possible oxidative modification of key proteins that are components of the EC coupling machinery or maybe and or on myofilaments, right?
We published that. We compared the wild-type IR, you know, ischemic reperfusion versus a knockout. You know, look at the EC coupling proteins. We found that the sodium-calcium exchanger was increased compared to the wild-type. In the knockout was elevated compared to wild-type. The sodium-calcium exchange current was also elevated. We also found that the alpha-2 subunit of sodium-potassium ATPase was also depressed. However, if we measure the calcium transient and single cell contraction in the myocytes, in the, compared to wild type versus the knockout, you know, both after hypoxia reoxygenation, we couldn't find, you know, much difference. So we think there's some energetics issue that we are still working on.
In the discussion, you advance a very intriguing hypothesis that is low levels of H2O2 emission, such as those occurring in normal hearts, may tonically activate the RPM2 channels, thereby realizing a sort of a virtual kind of preconditioning type of circle to maintain a proper mitochondria, likely cytosolic redox balance. So my last question for you is whether you think that when administering doxorubicin and seeing the worsening of cardiac contractility and increased mortality in global TRPM2 mice, you really see oxidized TRMP2 channels in these hearts.
We think that the calcium entry through the TRPM2 somehow activates the calcium dependent dehydrogenase in the mitochondrial matrix. And that would provide NADH for the electron transport chain. So in the normal mitochondria, that superoxide that is made, you know, will be converted to hydrogen peroxide. And hydrogen peroxide in the mitochondria will generate the ADP ribose, which then diffuse out the mitochondria to activate a TRPM2 channel at the surface membrane. That's how we think it's working. Now, so the key observations are these. At baseline, without any stress at all, even though we found the mitochondria dysfunction, we found lower ATP levels, but if you measure the function of the whole heart with either echocardiogram or DPDT, you don't find any difference. You have to have a second hit, a second insult, like ischemia reperfusion, like doxorubicin, to really demonstrate a difference. So we were working that the knockout were in a very, very kind of teetering bioenergetic balance, but they can somehow make do that they still have the normal contractile function. But once you add a second hit, that worsening bioenergetics picture will then really show the aggravation of the dysfunction.
Thank you very much, Joe. And congratulations again on this nice work. It looks like you have a lot more work to do, and we look forward to learning more on these TRIP channels in the near future. So finally, I would like to thank both Joe and Naz for the lively discussion and thank the audience for listening. Back to you, Carol.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.